Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Polystyrene foam takeout containers banned in Washington starting June 1st. Wolf deaths in Oregon are alarming, according to wildlife officials. Highways 64 and 162 closed in the Camas Prairie area, and City of Moscow Climate Awards and XR Palouse kicks off week of action. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Now that Governor Brad Little has signed House Bill 710, which requires school and public libraries to remove books a complainant deems harmful to minors or face fines, libraries in Idaho now face the question of what is considered harmful. House Bill 710 doesn't give much guidance. Like most censorship efforts, the censors keep their definitions vague so as to cast a wide net to forbid communication about lifestyles and attitudes they consider inferior. The bill defines harmful to minors based on the state's 1972 obscenity code, which prohibits writings about sexual conduct, and state law defines sexual conduct as, among other things, any act of homosexuality. So depictions of intercourse or masturbation are obviously outlawed in a book, not in the adult section of a library, but Idaho Falls Library Director Robert Wright told the Idaho Education News a strict reading of the new law would ban a depiction of a child with two same-sex parents as inappropriate for children. Wright said, "Idaho Falls is so diverse. We have same-gender families, so we have books that talk about same-gender families. The picture book that shows little Timmy going to school with two dads or two moms, what are the community standards?" Wright says it will likely take a lawsuit to answer that question. He said, until it's litigated, and it'll probably be litigated at some point, we don't really know where we're at. The Idaho Library Association has published a list of books already challenged in Idaho, and many of them feature stories with LGBTQ characters or themes. House Bill 710, which Governor Little signed last week, bars libraries, including public and private school libraries, from making harmful material accessible to minors, requires libraries to develop a policy and create a form through which anyone can challenge a book they deem harmful, gives anyone the right to sue a library if officials decline or neglect to restrict a challenged book to an adults-only section within 60 days of a complaint, and makes libraries liable for up to a $250 fine, along with potential civil damages if a book is not restricted and a court determines it is harmful. The law is slated to take effect July 1st unless there is a court challenge to block it. The bill's sponsors were Republican Representative Jerome Crane of Nampa and Republican Senator Cindy Carlson of Riggins and Chuck Winder of Boise. The law has the potential to amplify extremist tendencies to censor. For example, anyone can challenge a book to force its removal. The person challenging the book does not have to be a parent or guardian, does not have to live in the library or school district, and does not have to be a resident of Idaho. There's no limit on how many times a single book can be challenged, leaving the book open to repeated challenges if initial challenges fail to get the book removed. Wright said, "We're just going to be waiting to see what transpires. I'm sure there will be people lined up on July 1st that have books they don't want in the library." Bonneville County Prosecutor Randy Neal has prosecuted the Idaho Falls School Board for mailing information to school district residents explaining the need to pass a school bond, because he says the mailers crossed the line into advocating for a ballot measure, which would violate a 2018 Idaho law that banned school districts and local governments from advocating for ballot measures, but would allow them to provide information in a, quote, factually neutral manner. The anti-education group, the Idaho Freedom Foundation, says the Idaho Falls School Board's mailers violated that law because, it says, the schools in the district are overcrowded. Bonneville County Prosecutor Neal said he had no choice but to move forward with the complaint because saying the district is overcrowded, was advocating for the bond. According to the Idaho Statesman, Neal said it would be all right to say the schools were built for a certain number of students, but now there are more. He said, "What I can't do is say we need to replace the school because it's overcrowded. That's advocating for the bond." Education supporters accused Neal of doing the bidding of the Idaho Freedom Foundation. The anti-education group advocated for an extreme bill in 2017 that would have banned all flyers and mailers from school boards and local governments during an election and would have imposed $1,000 fines. That bill did not pass, but the compromise bill from 2018 still bans advocating and imposes $250 fines. The Idaho Falls School Board wanted to pass a $250 million bond in 2023 to build a new high school and two elementary schools. That bond, which needed a two-thirds supermajority to pass under state law, failed. Neal called for a total of $375 in fines, and the school district fought it in court because if they paid the fine, it would be admitting guilt. The Idaho Freedom Foundation, however, is free under the law to advocate against school bonds all it wants. The Idaho Statesman reports the foundation's lobbying arm, Idaho Freedom Action, was a top purchaser of Facebook ads in the state before last year's primary elections. It appears the Idaho Freedom Foundation was behind getting the advocating bans on the books. Idaho Business for Education President Rod Gramer, who leads the group of business leaders who want to improve Idaho's public schools, says the Idaho Freedom Foundation has a big influence on Republican legislators. The Idaho Freedom Foundation's legislative index assigns positive and negative points on each bill, signaling to Republican lawmakers how they must vote on a bill to avoid facing a primary challenge from someone further to the right. Gramer said they monitor every single vote and then they really go after people that don't vote in alignment with them. And I can tell you just from being around the legislature that a lot of legislators are afraid of them. They've made it very clear that they want to defund education and privatize education. Speaking of the Idaho Freedom Foundation's legislative index, Republican Senator Rod Furness of Rigby said, "There's some legislators who follow that religiously and just look at those notes and see how to vote." Idaho Freedom Foundation leaders routinely turn down opportunities to talk to the press, and IFF President Ron Nate declined to comment or reply to written questions for a recent Idaho Statesman article on the advocacy ban. Nate had previously written the index provides an quote, objective measure, unquote, of how lawmakers vote on what he calls, quote, principles of freedom and limited government. He wrote last year, "Score well and your political profile is good, score low and you have some explaining to do." Local Republican Central Committees last year sought to sanction various Republican legislators who did not vote far right enough. In one example, Republican Party Central Committee in Latah, Nez Perce, and Lewis counties censured District 6 Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston for, among other things, her vote against the 2023 Library Harmful Material Bill. They also sanctioned her in Latah County for her vote against a bill that bans the use of vaccine requirements for entry into public venues or a requirement for work, with the exception for healthcare facilities. McCann is facing two primary challengers this year from the far right. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, specializing in food, goods, and programs that nourish and nurture our community. The Moscow Food Co-op is located at 121 East 5th Street. For more information, visit moscowfood.coop, call 882-8537, or find them on Facebook. KRFP is also sponsored by
Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street, at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
Idaho Transportation Department Public Information Officer Mark Pfeiffer reports officials have closed State Highways 64 and 162 between Kamiai and Nez Perce indefinitely due to mudslides. Pfeiffer said officials closed the highways Monday night and they could remain closed for weeks. Highway 64 from Nez Perce to Kamiai is closed from milepost 24 to milepost 30. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Pfeiffer said there is significant material blocking State Highway 64. He said crews are clearing the slide, but it's likely Highway 64 will remain closed for several days or possibly weeks. Pfeiffer said State Highway 162, which runs south from Nez Perce through Seven Mile Canyon to Kamiai, is closed at the Four Corners to milepost 22 near the Kamiai city limits. He said the road has structural damage from a washout. Pfeiffer said Idaho County workers conducted assessments yesterday along Fort Misery Road, which branches off Highway 162. Pfeiffer said Highway 64 received the heaviest amount of damage of the two roads. He said engineers cannot yet determine the scope of the damage or how long the roads will be closed. Transportation Department officials say drivers between Kamiai and Nez Perce should use U.S. Highway 12 and U.S. Highway 95 as alternate routes. Washington lawmakers have banned the use of polystyrene clamshell containers commonly used for restaurant takeouts starting June 1st. Lawmakers passed the law during the 2021 session. Zero Waste Washington Executive Director Heather Trim said it's a big deal. Trim told the Washington State Standard, "We have had over time just an explosion in the use of single-use plastic foodware." The State Department of Ecology says it's expensive to recycle expanded polystyrene, and most recycling centers don't accept it, and when they do, food residue complicates the process. The environmental group Oceana reports 11 states have passed laws to phase out expanded polystyrene foam. Seattle banned foam food containers 15 years ago. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek signed an expanded polystyrene ban last year, similar to Washington's. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife officials say Oregon's wolf population has stopped increasing in the last year, in part because of people killing a large number of wolves. The state's annual wolf report says the wolf population was 173 as of the end of 2023. Last year was the first time in 8 years that the Oregon wolf population did not increase. In the years prior, the state's wolf population was growing at 6% per year. The Oregon Capital Chronicle reports 33 of the 36 recorded wolf deaths last year were caused by people. State wildlife officials sanctioned 16 of the deaths after associated wolves caused livestock deaths. The annual wolf report says 12 of the wolf deaths were illegal. Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department Wildlife Division Administrator Bernadette Graham Hudson wrote in a press release, "The amount of poaching and other suspicious deaths is alarming, impacts our conservation goals, and could affect our ability to manage wolves in Oregon." Wolves are protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act in most of central and western Oregon. 4 of the illegal killings took place where they are under federal protection. 7 of the illegal wolf deaths were due to poisoning. The Oregon State Police and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are offering a $50,000 reward for information on 3 of the illegal deaths. The other wolf deaths were due to vehicles hitting them, cancer, natural causes, and undetermined causes. The reports say a livestock owner killed one wolf last year in self-defense. Moscow Mayor Art Bethke gave out annual Earth Day awards at Monday night's city council meeting. There were a number of categories. Here's all the awards.
Is the individual award for Samantha Lewis. She was nominated for her efforts to lead her community in picking up litter, reducing waste, and advocating for sustainable action. A few examples that were provided by her nominator include making an effort to collect, haul out, and recycle trash when she's visiting places or events that do not have recycling, She recycles, in fact, her old running shoes. So, which makes me wonder if some of her shoes appeared as some of our overlay on the streets as part of the rubber mix that goes into those. She practices and promotes plogging, which is picking up litter while jogging. Encourages and provides education to others on the importance of recycling, composts her own organic waste, and buys in bulk when possible. So, Samantha, come on up.
Jogging, I love it.
I might be able to jog that way.
I was going to say I might actually be able to, that might help me.
Maybe
you
should jog.
Picking up litter while jogging. Picking litter, jogging. I'm on board.
We should try it. It
should be a club.
Yeah, we should have t-shirts. Yeah.
I just want one of the grabby things.
Plogging.
Hi, everyone. This is actually my first time at a city council meeting, so this is very cool.
Welcome.
I've been in Moscow for 7 years, so I feel bad that this is my first time, but a good excuse, I guess. Just want to thank Kathleen Colley for nominating me for this award. I feel like it's unnecessary, super appreciated, just because I feel like as a human being who cares about, I don't know, I want to be around, you know, I want everyone to be around for a long time on this earth, and something that I feel like we should all be doing anyways, but super appreciated, and thank you. And I will say, as a trail runner, I spend a lot of time up on Moscow Mountain, and I think as a runner, like, just being a steward of the earth is super important, because I get to experience all these beautiful landscapes. So
you're here.
Thank you.
Next up, we have a joint award shared. It's the Green Visionaries and Water Champions going to Paul Kimmel and John Kimberling. Paul and John were nominated for their efforts in founding the Palouse Basin Water Summit. The Palouse Basin Water Summit has brought people from our area together to discuss our most important resource, water, and its conservation. And that's gone on for over 20 years now and is counting. Without their leadership, it wouldn't have become the staple event that it is today. And their efforts are reflected in progress in water conservation and planning, and in search of an alternative water source for both of our communities, Moscow Pullman and the larger Palouse Basin aquifer area, and have initiated enough impetus to begin looking to the federal government for some funding to assist us in developing an alternative water source, which is probably the most existential issue facing Moscow and Pullman. So, gentlemen, much appreciated. The Community Development Department was nominated for the many efforts and actions to create more housing choice, densification, increase walkability, collect stormwater runoff, and to improve the quality of that stormwater runoff, as well as to enhance urban forestry. Do we have anybody from community development? On behalf of city staff, we have Tammy Gray, and she was nominated for her work to support several environmental programs. She's responsible for the development and continued success of our Eco Driver program, which helps reduce fuel consumption by the city's automotive fleet, and that subsequently reduces greenhouse gas emissions. So she's done a fabulous job. I'm sure if she could quote the statistics on the Eco Driver system. So, Tammy, where are you?
She is not here.
Would you like to say a few words on her behalf?
I will, actually.
Oh, very good. Well,
Kelly for Tammy.
We'll be beautiful anyway. We've got artificial intelligence. We can paste it.
Careful, princess.
Pretend.
So I'm accepting this today on behalf of Tammy. She wasn't able to be here today. She's out of town. But I do have to just let you know that she's very appreciative of the award. She actually called us when we sent her the notice. And she's like, is this a joke? So she really didn't think she was receiving this. So she's very appreciative of it. And I'll make sure she gets it.
Thanks, Kelly. Good.
Okay, next up is one of my very favorite nonprofits, MAMBA, the Moscow Area Mountain Bike Association. And they were nominated for their efforts to build and maintain a network of non-motorized trails on Moscow Mountain. Specifically, they were nominated for the new Pinstamum Path and Love Connection trails that are above Idler's Rest. And they were installed last year in conjunction with the Palouse Land Trust and Trish Hartzell. And if you've not been out to Idler's Rest to hike those trails, I highly recommend that you do so because they're great. Also, Mamba is constructing and maintaining trails on city land on Moscow Mountain, which opens new terrain and connects with other trails up there. And that promotes fitness, utilization of our outdoor recreational lands, and generally takes good care and stewardship of the lands that are up on the mountain. So who's here from Mamba? I love that acronym, by the way. Yeah. For the university group, we're talking the University of Idaho Sustainability Group. The UI Sustainability Group was nominated for their work to help University of Idaho receive a gold certification through the Sustainability Tracking, Rating, and Assessment System, conveniently acronymed STARS. They're currently the only university in the state to have earned this level of recognition. Some other examples of their action include procuring $90,000 in a DEQ grant for a biodigester, earned B Campus USA recognition, earned Tree Campus and Higher Education recognition, launched Green Event, Green Office, and Green Lab certification programs to promote innovative, sustainable practices throughout the campus, and developed an interdisciplinary undergraduate sustainability certificate. Is there a U of I rep? Oh, excellent. And by the way, the number of syllables in some of those words is higher education. And lastly, we have a community project, which is the Harvest Park. The Harvest Park is intended as an edible forest park with food-bearing trees, shrubs, and other flora. The park will provide educational opportunities and be an example to the community of a stewardship of a public food forest. In 2021, 43 edible trees and shrubs, well, the products of the edible trees, not the edible trees, were planted by volunteers around the periphery of the park. Work continued in 2022 and 2023 with 85 volunteers planting pollinator-friendly plants in the dogleg portion of the park off to the east side. This is an ongoing effort with more planting events already scheduled for 2024. And the, well, I was going to say fruits, but fruits and nuts and other produce that result from the Harvest Park will be available for the public to come through and harvest on their own for their own non-commercial uses. So who we got from the Harvest Park?
Yay!
Those were the annual Earth Day Awards given out by Moscow Mayor Art Bedke at last night's Moscow City Council meeting. Extinction Rebellion Palouse is sponsoring a week of action in an effort to call attention to the climate emergency. The first XR Palouse event of the week was Monday night at the Kenworthy Theater in Moscow for a showing of the eye-opening documentary Once You Know. Here's Cass Davis, Rhea Kumar, and Paul Bush of XR Palouse speaking after the movie.
Last Monday tonight, the second city council meeting of the month happened. Last month, I talked to our city council and asked them to declare a climate emergency. And it isn't just for the reason of declaring an emergency, which there's a lot of reasons for, but the Climate Psychological Alliance recognizes eco-anxiety and climate anxiety as not a disease, but the way, as Paul said earlier, that we should be responding to these threats. But they said when a problem really happens is when we feel that sense of isolation. When you walk around like he did in the movie and you feel like everything's surreal around you. Everything is business as usual. And yet you know in your head what's going on. And that profound feeling of isolation can be overwhelming and it can lead to depression. And depression leads to actually clinically bad condition to be in. And so if we have each other, and if we acknowledge together the situation that we face, it's very helpful. And I am one of these people who, there are a lot of us who cannot compartmentalize. We can't take the problem out in front of our eyes and sit it over here. And that's, I think, what makes people activists, is when it's always in your face and you have no choice but to be part of the movement.
One of the things that we learned in my global climate change class this semester actually was the term moral outrage. It is the feeling, it's the kind of sense of justice really that you get when you see something going wrong. It's not necessarily like, oh, someone stole your toy, you know, and you're upset about that. It's more you see, you know, something that you think is fundamentally immoral going on. And I think that that is probably how a lot of us feel about the fossil fuel industry, for example, or government's criminal inactions when it comes to climate change. And so I think that we could all perhaps take our moral outrage at things and really channel it into a movement.
We've got 4 dams on the Lower Snake River that make already a warming climate much worse for salmon, steelhead, and lamprey, which of course is a necessity of the Nez Perce people, but also of the native ecosystem. There's a new forest plan being developed by the National Nez Perce and Clearwater National Forest that would massively, by 4 times, increase logging output, timber output on the national forest, instead of leaving those forests to absorb carbon. Of course, our city has some element of climate plans, but they're not serious enough. And one of the things that XR is doing that you can check out up front with the QR code is to comment on what a serious climate plan would be for the city. One that doesn't say, well, we'll invest in offset carbon credits. No, we've got to get to zero. We've got to get rid of fossil fuels. That's the only way around. And of course, there's a lot of other social challenges, but that's really the main gist. So there are so many parts of this that affect our lives that are right here. And you don't need to feel numb with the world being so out of reach. Well, what's going on in Iran or in Palestine is too much. What's going on in Moscow is just enough for us to deal with. And that's the whole point of community. And that's the whole point of coming out to things like this and getting organized and trying to fight.
That was Paul Bush, along with Rhea Kumar and Cass Davis of XR Palouse, speaking after a showing of the documentary Once You Know at the Kenworthy in Moscow Monday night. Other events during the Extinction Rebellion of the Palouse Week of Action include a participatory public art installation from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. Wednesday at Friendship Square. On Thursday at 6:30 p.m., there will be a talk on the GTN Express pipeline expansion in the region from Helen Yost at the 1912 Center in the Fisk Room, 412 East 3rd Street. That's at 6:30 p.m. Thursday. On Friday, there's a biodiversity ball with the bands The Pond and the Evergreen Afro-Dub Orchestra. It's the 3rd annual biodiversity ball, and there will be an aquatic life-themed costume contest as well. And on Saturday, XR Palouse, along with the Paradise Ridge Defense Coalition, is hosting a Paradise Ridge guided grief walk. They'll meet at 10 a.m. Saturday at the University of Idaho Arboretum South Barn. Whitman County Sheriff's deputies arrested 33-year-old Christopher Cornelius of Yakima near Colfax Friday night on several felonies following a high-speed chase. A Whitman County Sheriff's Office news release said law enforcement booked Cornelius into the Whitman County Jail on a charge of possession of a stolen vehicle, driving under the influence, attempting to elude police, possession of methamphetamine and fentanyl, and unlawful possession of a firearm. According to the Washington Department of Corrections, Cornelius is a convicted felon for robbery and has an active Corrections Department arrest warrant related to the case, which originated in Yakima County. Idaho State Police report Montana resident 68-year-old Gary Slabach died in a motorcycle accident on U.S. Highway 12 near Powell. According to the Daily News, the accident occurred at milepost 163. Idaho County Coroner Cody Funk identified Gary Slabach as the deceased person. State police say Slabach was riding a 2016 Harley in the eastbound lane of U.S. Highway 12. When the motorcycle left the roadway and crashed down an embankment and collided with trees, emergency medical responders declared Slabach dead at the scene. Slabach was wearing a helmet, and his next of kin have been notified. State police have started an investigation into the accident. The Pullman City Council will vote tonight on a contract with the Washington Transportation Improvement Board to receive a $1 million grant to fund parts of the Pullman Downtown Improvements Project. The money would be for items not included in the original bid from the contractor, so if the council decides to accept the grant, they will have to approve a change order for the project. The money is for $1.18 million worth of bid additives, including benches, trash receptacles, bike racks, and planters. The State Transportation Improvement Board would pay for approximately 85% of those added improvements. The Pullman Council will also vote tonight on accepting the $1.2 million low bid from Motley Construction to build the Terraview and Crestview paths, which are to be 12 feet wide and extend just under 2,100 feet total. Planners say the 1,200-foot Terraview path would go from Northeast Merman Drive to Northeast North Fairway Road, and the Crestview path would go 890 feet between South Grand Avenue and Southeast Thompson Street. The project also includes 2,095 linear feet of curb and gutter, 305 square yards of sidewalk, 2,420 square feet of modular block retaining wall, and 935 feet of pedestrian railing, among other things. The council will also vote on an ordinance establishing guidelines for when and how water customers can apply to water irrigated spaces in an effort to encourage responsible outdoor water usage and conservation. The council will also hear the annual report from the Parks and Recreation Department at its meeting tonight. They will also hear a presentation on the Blue Bridge Alliance Police Awards, and there'll be a financial update for the fourth quarter of 2023. The Pullman City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. There is a 20% chance of rain and snow showers before midnight tonight. Partly cloudy, otherwise low 28. Tomorrow, 20% chance of precipitation. Slight chance of rain and snow showers before 2 p.m. Then a slight chance of rain showers. Snow level rising to 3,600 feet in the afternoon. Mostly sunny, high 50. And Wednesday night through Saturday, mostly clear weather, low 30 Wednesday night, highs 54 Thursday, 57 Friday, and 60 on Saturday, lows 31 Thursday and Friday night, current temperature 46. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, and the public affairs and recordings of local events, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP. Be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. You can also check on the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Flashpoints is up next, and at 7:30, Rude Awakening is on the air from 7:30 to 9:30 here at KRFP. And then Brent Bent will be in to spin some discs for you, 9:30 to 11. And we'll have Jeremy Scahill's excellent podcast called Intercepted at 11 p.m. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by Hunga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hunga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
KRFP supports progressive values, including multiculturalism and environmentalism.